good afternoon. Welcome to the program. A number of things to get to today, including a preview of tonight's Toronto Maple Leafs-Vancouver Canucks matchup. Looks like no Sam Bennett in for the Calgary Flames tonight. Fuel the trade speculation as they face off against the Winnipeg Jets. We're going to be joined bottom of the hour by Doug Armstrong, St. Louis Blues general manager, and the man who will handle the general manager responsibilities for Team Canada at their Olympic efforts. Doug Armstrong is going to join us here in about 30 or 35 minutes' time. Meanwhile, Brian Burke, Justin Bourne, good afternoon, gentlemen. And before we get on the Maple Leafs page and a preview of that game, a preview of the other games on the go around the NHL, the headline continues to be COVID. The latest news is Buffalo Sabres head coach Ralph Krueger, who we should mention is 61 years old, has tested positive. This is on the heels of yesterday's announcements by the Minnesota Wild of five players, their games on pause till February the 9th. One more player in Colorado. Buffalo's already on pause as well. We all know about the New Jersey Devils situation. Ralph Krueger, Berkey, is the latest. And, you know, you mentioned something interesting on the show last night when we were doing Boston and Philadelphia, is that you know, maybe 56 games is a pipe dream, and we should be looking more at percentages than games played in points. You want to expand on that?
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess I do. My belief is that the NHL has some runway left at the end of the regular season, and they've got probably a week to 9-10 days at the end of the playoff window before the Olympics begin, and NBC insists on that window closing for hockey. That's assuming the Olympics comes off, and I believe they're going to play the Olympic Games no matter what. Empty stands a whole bit. But anyway, it's apparent to me that right now, I was just reading, preparing for the show, and one team has 50 games left in 100 days. It's more than every other day. It's like 49 games in 90 days, whatever it is. It's already too compressed. And they're going to cancel games and schedule them back in. And I think that there's two possibilities. One, you do like baseball did, and if you have meaningless games late in the year, you just don't play them.
Right.
But I think more likely it'll be, no, we're going to play as many games as we can, and we're going to stick with this. We're going to cancel games when we need to. I think the league is showing amazing persistence in this thing. They don't have a choice, but I think it's impressive nonetheless. And I think my prediction is that there will be teams that qualify for the playoffs that do not play 56 games.
And then at that point, it's all determined by percentages.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world.
No, I think everybody looks at this, like honestly, Brian, I think everybody looks at this season and says, we need to cut everybody a lot of slack. We need to, you know, don't look for any sort of philosophical consistency from one season to another when you're dealing with a situation like this. So if some teams play five games less, I think we look at it and say, okay, so be it. What do you think?
When it's a crisis, Jeff, it's a crisis when the team that misses playoffs because they have a worse points percentage still had five of their last six games against Ottawa or something like that, and they can go, hey, you know, we didn't get our fair shot at the cake teams. I understand that it is going to be what it is going to be, but there will be complaints if that's the case, but I'm with you guys. It's got to be the way it is, so let's plow on.
The latest news, if you missed it, Ralph Krueger testing positive for COVID-19. This is one of the things that I worried about in the bubble, and we didn't see it. You know, coaches, I mean, there's a lot of coaches, you know, that are in their 60s behind NHL benches. We think of Rick Bonus. We think of Joel Quenneville, Ralph Krueger, who's now positive at 61 years of age. I think a lot of people would look at the players and say, as a wide brush statement, okay, you know, young, healthy players is one thing, but then coaches in their 60s is another. And, you know, after the news yesterday about Minnesota, a number of different changes to arena protocols, most notably the glass behind the benches. Those are taken down. More spacing in the rooms as well. How do you feel about, Brian, what the NHL has done? I mean, obviously, to your point, what the NHL is doing is, let's get the season underway and then let's react and adapt as the days, weeks, and months go on. They've reacted quickly on this one. What do you make of the rink changes by the NHL?
Well, I think it sounds to me like they're trying to increase the airflow on the benches, and that's the number one thing. ventilation and the upgrade of ventilation systems in the arenas. I mean, this is the biggest issue facing schools, from what I'm reading too, is they've got to improve. They've got it now where in some buildings they can recycle the air in 30 minutes. Every 30 minutes, the air in the building goes through a approved HEPA filter. And that's obviously, if with an airborne disease, that's obviously going to be one of the keys going forward. So it's like everything, Jeff. I support whatever the league and the health experts say will help alleviate these concerns. And some the health officials in these municipalities and provinces are allowing us to play. All right? And we've got to adhere to whatever rules they come up and whatever recommendations they come up with to make it better.
Mm-hmm. I wonder from a silver lining perspective if there won't be some good to come out of this in the future for hockey teams because, hey, man, any cold or any flu that got contracted by a single player in a hockey team and a team would be on the shelf for a month, you know, just passing it from player to player and the way things were. I wonder if some of these improved ventilation systems won't help NHL teams stay healthier in future years.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe even not to get too ahead of ourselves here, but here I go. It would be foolhardy to think that the NHL isn't talking about it or trying to come up with some type of plan for it. But given the realities of how this virus is acting right now, and I get that it's early February and, you know, playoffs are still months away. I mean, Brian, I mean, you've worked in the NHL office. You know those people. You know how the office works and how they plan. What could they be thinking about playoffs right now? Because I know it's not a front burner right now, but you know how that office operates, and you're always thinking about, okay, what happens with playoffs?
Yeah, and for people who, what Jeff's referring to is the league is so organized, they would have probably six or seven different scenarios done for playoffs. I heard floated yesterday some type of bubble for the third and fourth round. That's a possibility. But you got to realize some of these places where teams are playing are allowing fans in the building, and restaurants are open, and it's not like that. We don't have one positive case in Canada with a player or a staff member.
Yeah,
all these cases are south of the border. As lifestyle changes are very different down there, but the league would have a bunch of scenarios. And again, what I heard floated yesterday was a semi bubble or a hard bubble for the third and fourth rounds. Not until then.
What do you think of playoffs, Justin?
Well, you know, I'm still of the mind that it is sort of a you got to do what you got to do type of thing. But, like, at this point, you're not missing out on fans. I'm with, I think, a lot of people where you hope that things improve to the point that by playoffs we're able to have more fans and, you know, people are vaccinated and off we go. I realize that's mostly fantasy. And if that's the way it's got to be, that's the way it's got to be. I do applaud the NHL, though, for their flexibility because, in general, large corporations and businesses are inflexible, they're immobile, it's really tough to make any sort of changes. So to do things on the fly, including taking the glass out behind the coaches' benches and have multiple plans for playoffs, in the past, waiting for hubs, you know, the best thing they've done is remain nimble, and that's the only way to stay, not ahead of this thing, but to not fall too far behind.
Like everybody else, like our lives, Justin, like your life, Brian, like your life as well. You go day to day, you try to do your best, and you adapt along the way.
Every day I don't, murder my family is a good day, Jeff. I'm doing very well here. We're all surviving.
You've set the bar quite high for yourself there, Justin. We'll wait. Like every day between 5 to 6 Eastern, the COVID protocol list comes out, and it's turned from who's on it to how many are on it and what does that mean for that team. We'll pause on that conversation and dovetail into the games tonight. And the Maple Leafs are back in action. Nick Petan is in for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Leafs are back at it after after what shouldn't feel like a lengthy rest, Brian, but feels like a lengthy rest considering how compressed the schedule is. Playing the first of three against the Vancouver Canucks. What do you make of tonight's matchup?
Well, I hope they enjoyed their 2 weeks off because that's what it feels like.
I'm sure they've been in Maui or somewhere.
I made reference to this last week when I talked about the depth. Part of the philosophy, and Justin knows this, part of the philosophy of the Leafs has been, under this regime, has been to overpay guys and stick them with the Marlies so the Marlies have a stacked veteran lineup. And it's it bears particular fruit in this situation. They've got quality people, the Andersons of the world, the Patans of the world. They've got quality people lined up for the taxi squad and ultimately for the Marlies if that comes to pass. So I like Nick Patan as a player. I think having depth where you can, the guys that are plugging in seem to be contributing every night. I think the Leafs are playing real good hockey right now. They're going to be tough for anyone to beat right now.
One of the strengths of the Leafs' depth right now is that it doesn't fall behind. Like a lot of times at the bottom of the lineup, when you look at a top-heavy team, and I think you'd call the Leafs top-heavy, you say, well, but once those bottom two lines are out there, you know, it's anything goes. It's terrible. I don't think the Leafs' bottom six forwards have been great or anything, but they don't, you know, they're not giving up too much ground. They're holding the fort for the top guys to get back out there. So, you know, the weakness that's been exposed in Vancouver is like they don't have depth. The bottom of their forward group is weak, and so Montreal was able to eat them alive by, you know, just rolling line after line, and that was a real weakness. So if Toronto's bottom guys can keep pace and let those top guys come out and you know, do what they do against weaker opponents, I like Toronto's odds.
Yeah, let's get back to Toronto here in a couple of seconds, but Brian, curious about your thoughts on the Vancouver Canucks. Expectations were high. We get that. They had a wonderful playoff, an unexpected playoff. Some outstanding performances, and we think of Thatcher Demko right away. This is a team that, you know, I know a lot has been made about Markstrom and Tanev and to a lesser extent Josh Levo, but this is a team that lost some significant players and chose to keep others instead. Montreal has done a real job on Vancouver, Tyler Toffoli specifically, and that story is well told. What were your expectations of the Vancouver Canucks, and were they influenced by what we saw in the bubble, or did you look at the bubble performance and say, I don't know, that might be fool's gold there?
Well, they lost key components of that bubble team. Look at the personnel that left. I thought their performance in the bubble was mesmerizing. Yeah. I thought they were the most interesting team in the bubble, I thought. Because you see these kids stepping up and all this magic happening and Demko standing on his head. But when we did our preseason prognostications on this, Jeff, I said Thatcher Demko never played that well before. There's no reason to think he's going to resume at that level, and he hasn't. Mm-hmm. They lost Tanev. They lost Toffoli. They lost Markstrom. And I said this on Vancouver radio this morning. When you play with a goalie that's playing like an all-star, like Markstrom did last year, you get some bad habits. You start to cheat. You leave the zone a step early, or you turn away a little quicker than because you know he's going to stop the puck. Well, those bad habits are fatal when you're not getting that level of goaltending. Their goaltending hasn't been abysmal, but it hasn't been like it was last year. And I think they're figuring out we can't play the same way we played last year. We had that guy back there we could rely on. We got some bad habits. And we haven't broken them. And I don't think they've compensated for the loss. You know, they brought in Nate Schmidt. He's a good player. But Chris Tanev was a special guy on that team. And I don't think Nate Schmidt's plugged that hole.
Tanev helped Hughes a ton. Justin?
Well, and also just like a different role type of guy, right? Like the Canucks have the offensive firepower, the young guys who want to go. Tanev was such a great fit just in that he was someone who wasn't concerned with that aspect of the game and freed them up to do it a little bit more, where Nate Schmidt is another guy who kind of wants to go, which all of a sudden the Canucks are fourth last in the NHL in goals against per game. Everyone's go in the wrong way. Someone's got to come back or stay back and play defense at some point.
You know, one of the more interesting/frustrating/polarizing/at times inspiring players on the Vancouver Canucks is Jake Virtanen. And Brian, you'd be a lot closer to this than me. Every time I look at, like, if I just break down Jake Virtanen and look at the skill set, like just individual things that go into making a hockey player, I can't figure out how Jake Virtanen hasn't significantly clicked at the NHL level. Like all the things that go into skating, shooting, like all the physicality, all of it. He does all that. How come it hasn't worked yet?
Well, he's got all the tools. No question he hasn't figured out how to put them all to work at the same time. Because he's big, he can skate, he can fight, he can hit. but he does none of them consistently and never at the same time.
Does he get unmotivated, Berkey?
I haven't figured him out. Like I said on the radio in Vancouver this morning, everyone's figuring, well, he's going to figure it out someday. We'll figure it out now. He's from there. This would be where he should want to play. They invested a lot in him. They've been very patient with him. He's got to figure it out. So he's got to decide. See, to me, it's really simple with a young player. If he's going to be a physical guy, then he should be. That should be part of your DNA. They shouldn't have to ask you to be physical. Mm-hmm. And if you have a skill set that allows you to be a power forward, they shouldn't have to ask you to see that. But to me, it's real simple. Every night, you got to figure out a way to make a difference. When you're a kid, you got to get on the score sheet, make a difference in the game. And so with Jake, who skates that well, because to be a big hitter, you've got to be a good skater. Like, people don't realize that these hits don't just materialize. You've got to anticipate where the puck's going to go and get there first. And you got to be there when they get the puck so you can hit. So to be a good hitter, by definition, you need to be a good skater. He is a good skater. But he's got to start providing some punch in the lineup. If it's a night where he's not going to score, then bang somebody and maybe get in a fight. If it's a night when he's going to score, don't forget the checking. But they have given him plenty of opportunity. It's his obligation to figure this out, because the coach has given him enough rope to hang himself about 8 times.
Yeah, and what you're saying reminds me of the expression, you'd rather tame a tiger than have to paint stripes on a pussycat. I think that was like, you know, you'd rather a guy like Matthew Tkachuk, who goes too far sometimes and you got to settle him down, than someone that doesn't naturally want to play in your face aggressive and competitive, and you have to say, you know, go, 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 and, you know, let's, you know, try to talk the guy into it. And I think that part of the problem is when you are big and fast and strong, a guy like Vertanen, and expectations change of how you're supposed to operate, and not everyone wants to play the way that everyone else can see would be best for you. It seems to be a poor matchup of expectations for him versus the reality of the way he wants to play.
Well, he's not just a big guy who can skate. He can fight, too. I don't think he likes it.
Just doesn't want to, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he likes it. And part of being a trademark fighter is that you like it, or at least you're willing to do it on a regular basis. It may not be your first choice when you get up in the morning and say, hey, I hope I fight someone really tough tonight.
That's how I wake up.
If the situation emerges in the game where you have to fight, it's second nature. You don't hesitate. You don't say, gee, what should I do? You drop your gloves and start throwing them. So that's clearly not Jake. And he's a nice kid, too. Part of the reason he's getting 8 chances is he's a good kid. Like, there's no, you know, no one can't stand him around the room or anything like that. And if they go to trade him, they'll find that there's a market for him, because someone will figure out we can get to him.
Yeah. Oh, he seems like the classic guy on that team that you know, maybe the change of scenery. And to your point, Brian, all of a sudden the light switch goes off. And, oh, wow, this is the Jake Vertanen that, you know, that the Vancouver Canucks thought they were getting when they drafted him back at the Aaron Ekblad draft in Philadelphia.
Yeah, there's very few players that acquire bite as pros. Like, there's very few players. Yeah. Blake Wheeler's one of the only ones that we used to use him as an example to our scouting staff. There's a guy who was a soft skill guy who turned into a hard skill guy. But very few players make that transition. A guy who doesn't really like to fight seldom wakes up one morning and says, yeah, hey, now I really would, really, really, really would like to get in a fight.
just not pour there. Some milk on this bowl of nails and head to the rink here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not for me. But yeah, I just know that in the American League, when I was with the Marlies, Vertanen would get sent down and we do a lot of pregame. Like, I got to cut this guy off through the neutral zone. His speed, he'll crash and bang on the forecheck. We got to move the puck quick. And then you go out there, it's just nothing. Just nothing. So I was wondering about the motivation sometimes, but I don't know. Maybe this is too much Jake Vertanen talk.
Okay, so let's dovetail to Elias Pettersson. And it was a tough start to the season for EP40, as he's called in Vancouver. You know, when he's on his game, he's one of the most interesting players to watch. Like, he's just flat out fun and really creative and smart and skilled. And he's got the great one-timer. I just love that he's, you know, singularly trying to keep the slap shots in the game for forward. Like, I love all of that. Tough start to the season, played better of late. Brian, we'll start with you. The audit so far on Elias Pettersson, who we should mention is in a contract year, albeit he's a restricted free agent.
I think, well, first off, I'd say incomplete because it's so early in the season, but it's a tale of two cities for me. It's like his first couple games, he looked lost, and we're doing these games on TV saying, what, like, he never makes bad passes. He's making bad passes. never indecisive. Now he's indecisive. And so you're looking, well, what happened to this guy? What happened? Then all of a sudden, I remember it was game four or five, I think, for them. He had a good, at the end of the second period, he made a good play and kept a puck in and deked a guy and got a shot on net. And it was almost like, okay, now it's coming back. The next period, he was better. And then he's back to his old, confident, innovative self. I love watching him play. I think what you said, Jeff, is there are really good players in our league who never sell a ticket.
Yep.
You know, Trevor Linden was a great player for me. I loved having him on my team. Never sold a ticket. Just a good player.
Great example.
And then, but Petey sells tickets. I'm not calling him EP40. I never heard of that one. The players call him Petey. Petey sells tickets. Those guys are rare. Like, I'll give you a line mate of his. JT Miller doesn't sell tickets. Petey sells tickets. And they're both really good players. So I see that panache, that flash, that, Pavel Bure sold tickets all by himself. And I see that with Petey. I think he's just fun to watch, and he's making it happen. And I think Miller drives that line, but I think Petey's the guy you want to watch.
There are guys who seem like they slow the game down, or that they're being, I guess they're just bringing the pace of the play down, but it's because they're so far mentally ahead of the play, they're letting things develop to where they want them to get. That's him to me. You know, and Pavel Datsyuk is a good comparison for me, or a guy gets the puck and it's like, oh, he's going to lull us all to sleep, and then, oh, he saw something coming, that the rest of us didn't. That takes confidence to play like that. You know, to hold on to the puck and let that, you really have to be feeling good about yourself. And there were certainly moments earlier in this season where he looked like a normal human being, and that's not what that kid is. So I think we're seeing it again more. You know, kid, he's got 55 goals in the first 2 years of his career. His point per game guy last year, he's well below that now. It's going to come. He's going to be above a point per game from here the rest of the way for the Canucks. But yeah, it's been a little rocky on and off early in the season.
Do you guys have a thought on Nils Höglander, top six right winger with the Vancouver Canucks? Here's someone that's, you look at the list of, rookies, they've been spoiled the last few seasons. 3 years ago, it's Brock Besser. Then it's Elias Pettersson. Last year, it's Quinn Hughes. And now, here's Nils Höglander, who joins the mix, who we should point out already had, what was it, Brooke? Like 20 or 22 games experience before the NHL season started, having already played in Sweden. So he did have, in some ways, kind of a head start on everybody else. But do you have a thought on Höglander, Brooke?
Yeah, I love him. I think this kid, he's skilled. He's a stocky guy. Like, he's not a small, skilled guy. This guy goes to the dirty areas. He bangs. I really like what he's shown so far. And they got him on the power play. I think he's just going to get better. And again, I said this on the radio in Vancouver this morning. If people are screaming and yelling for Jim Benning's head, but look at his drafting. He hired Travis Green, who I think is a hell of a coach. And look at his drafting. He's done some really good things there, and I think Höglander's going to prove to be one of them. This kid, you can see him getting better by the game, too, as he gets some confidence.
Yeah. Justin, last word to you.
Yeah, biggest thing for me with him is he takes care of things outside of just the offensive game that's going to keep him in the lineup when points dry up. You know, the plays we've seen from him have been great, the highlights, but what he's doing away from the puck, coming back on the back check through the middle, being in the right positions, and just it really the work ethic, stopping on piles, defensive side of things. He's done those things so that when the points aren't there, they'll still feel like they can use them, because you're going to hit those patches in the NHL at times. So I'm high on the kid, and I'm hopeful that he's not a guy who's going to be toggling in and out of the lineup. He should be a mainstay in this Canucks lineup.
Leafs back in action this evening. They'll face off against the Vancouver Canucks. We'll step away and we'll come back and we'll get on the Team Canada page and the St. Louis Blues page probably as well. Blues general manager Doug Armstrong will be aboard making headlines yesterday as he was named the general manager of the Canadian men's Olympic hockey team, joined by Holland, Francis, Luongo, Sweeney, and Scott Salmon as well. Doug Armstrong joins us as Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Do you want to be featured on Hockey Night in Canada? We're giving you the chance to be part of the Rogers Hometown Hockey viewing party this Saturday, where you can virtually meet Ron McLean, Tara Sloan, and NHL alumni. Be the fifth caller through right now to win. Call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590 for toll-free, or star 590 on your cell. You can also enter for the chance to win a spot in the Rogers Hometown Hockey section of the Sportsnet app. Find details at sportsnet.ca/590. Welcome back to the program. It's Hockey Central. Pleased to be joined now by the general manager of the St. Louis Blues. And yes, we're going to give him time to gush about Jordan Kyrou. But he's also the general manager at Team Canada for their Olympic efforts next year. He is Doug Armstrong, and he joins us now. Doug, first of all, congratulations. What was that? I'm curious what that moment was like when you get the call or have the conversation or the job is offered and you become the GM of Team Canada.
Well, it's certainly you're honored. You're taken a little bit back by having the opportunity again to work for Hockey Canada, and you know that by being part of the assistant management group the last couple of years, you understand the pressure that Steve Yzerman and Mike Babcock went through, and so you go in with your eyes wide open. But there's no greater honor in hockey to me than to work for Hockey Canada.
Brian Burke.
Hey, Army. Thanks for joining us. Congratulations.
Hey, bud, thank you.
It's awesome. And like you said, it's especially for guys like you and me that were never good enough to play for their countries to get picked. I was never asked to play for U.S. national team. I wasn't good enough. Yeah. And so, like, to me, this is my only chance to represent my country. And you feel a great pride and awesome. It's an awesome responsibility. But I wanted to mention, you mentioned an Army. You've been through this with a couple. You've been on the staff for four tournaments now, including world championships and stuff. So this is not new to you.
Yeah, no, actually, this is the ninth time I've worked for Hockey Canada in different ways, from world championships to the World Cup to the Olympics. So it's every time it's a great honor, and it's different. I think there's nothing bigger than the Olympics, Berkey. You and I shared that experience together in Sochi. I remember sitting with you in our room having a couple of adult pops and just talking about how lucky we were to be there. And it's something that I look forward to. I'm hoping the NHL, the NHLPA, and the IOC can find a way to make this happen, because it's great for our game and it's great for everyone involved.
But Army, alcohol was prohibited in the housing at Sochi.
He just meant large size pops. That makes them adult sized.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Doug, first off, congratulations on the great honor, of course. You've been through it in the past, as you've mentioned. Maybe you could take the rest of us through the process now. What comes next? You guys all get on a conference call and go, who do you like? Or what's the process now for the management group?
Yeah, well, quite honestly, it started last summer when the CBA was ratified. We knew that there was a likelihood that this could happen, and so Tom Rennie got in front of this very quickly. We had our group together of Kenny and I with Ron Francis and Don Sweeney. At that time, we put our mock list together of two teams. We reviewed each other's list, and you come up with some synergy on who you think should be on that team. And then, quite honestly, we had a call after the first round, after the second round, and after the finals of the playoffs. Reworked our rosters, and so now what we're doing is we have a long list that's getting shorter and shorter. And the hardest part is whittling this down, and you have to make those decisions. You don't want to get to next June with 55 players on your list. You want to get there. Quite honestly, when we name our coaching staff, I'd like to give that gentleman a list of probably 30, at maximum 32 or 33 players to look at. Because you have to make hard decisions, and we're in that process now of making the hard decisions.
Being joined by Doug Armstrong, he is the St. Louis Blues general manager, also GM of the Canadian Men's Olympic hockey team. And, you know, it's an impressive staff that you just went over there. I mean, Holland, Francis, Sweeney. And the other name that that may have caught others by surprise, or some by surprise, most recently netminder with the Florida Panthers, is Roberto Luongo. obviously will be involved in the decisions for goaltending, but how did you arrive at and how did the group arrive at Roberto Luongo's name being part of the staff?
Well, what we did is we, as I said, we started out with that initial group of guys, and then we got through the tournament, and I always feel, as Brian said, I've never been a good enough player to play in the NHL. So I do have a lot of trust in players that have been there, done that. And as a group, we bring in that has freshly played, someone that knew today's player, and not only knew them on the ice, but quite honestly know them off the ice, what makes guys tick. Like, as we joked about before, our generation would go have a cold one after a game, and now they play video games after a game. It's totally different. So Roberto was someone that obviously his career speaks for itself, his Olympic participation, and obviously we're going to rely on him heavily on the goaltending thing, but it's not just the goaltending that we're going to rely on him for. It's knowing today's players, knowing what makes them tick, and also helping us pick all the players, not just the goalies. But I felt it was important for me as a manager to have someone that had that been there, done that at ice level recently on our staff.
Brian?
Well, it should be easy, Army. 30 names. It'll take about 10 minutes. No one's going to second guess you, so what's the big deal? I think that a lot of people would have the misconception that you actually have the easiest job of anyone putting together an Olympic program, when in fact it's much more difficult when you've got stacked, you got lots of bodies at each position.
Well, it is difficult, and everybody agrees with you when the tournament's over if you win. And regardless of what you do, if you don't win, nobody agrees with what you did. They would have done it differently. And you going in, you know that that's the case. But you know, quite honestly, Berkey, as you know, it's way easier to have this problem than being in a country where you can't find 25 guys. so we'll take the challenges that we have and relish in the fact that there's so many great candidates to choose from.
Doug, how much will you prioritize position and playing style of the team? I mean, like, if there's, you know, 10 great centers in Canada, will you be content throwing a couple guys on the wing, or is it going to be you're looking more for wingers? And also with that, the playing style thing, are you trying to build the team to play a certain way, or just trying to take the best 20 guys, best 30 guys?
Yeah, no, we're not picking an all-star team. We have to have players that can touch every facet, penalty kill, power play, 5-on-5 play. But Hockey Canada has always had the belief that a centerman can go to the wing much easier than a winger can go to the center. So if you look at the national teams or the history of the national team, there's always been centers that have to go over. And this will be no different. That we're gonna take the best players to make a team, but there will be people that are out of their natural position of center ice having to go to the wings.
We haven't seen teams yet, but when you look at the international field, I mean, listen, Brian always likes, you know, joke about the USA, and it's always nice gentle ribbing between USA and Canada. But in a lot of ways, I don't think anyone would be surprised if at the end of all of this, it's Canada facing off against the United States of America. Sweden's always a powerhouse, Finland, Russia, etc. Have you, in any way, shape, or form, sort of looked around and in your own mind started to already handicap the field?
Yeah, in a sense that the way I look at it is I look at who were the dominant teams in the World Junior 5 and 6 years ago. Those are going to be the dominant teams in this tournament. Obviously the teams you just talked about, you have Russia, you have the USA, you have Sweden, you have Finland, they've competed at the top level. Like the Swedes, you know, what did they go 52 games without losing the regulation round?
Yes. Yes.
So they're going to have a good team. You know, Russia always finds a way to have players that have a good team. The USA has probably been as dominant as anyone in the World Juniors year in, year out since they started their program. So that's what I look at. And, you know, not going in 2018, there is a gap between 2014 and 2022 of 8 years. And so I think there's going to be different players. And so what I look at is who's going to be on those teams. I go back to who was on their World Junior teams in 15, 16, 17. Those are likely the players that we're going to see at the Olympics.
Brian?
two goalies on your staff, Army. You're going soft here. Kenny Holland and Louie? Two goalies.
Yeah, well, it's been a long time since Kenny's on those pads, so we won't put him in that fraternity any longer.
Yeah, I played against him. That's how long ago that was. I played against him in the American League. So looking around, I kind of follow up on Jeff's question. You know, the women's game has been plagued by the fact that at the international level, there's really only two players. You're really only two countries that invest the money and time. It's getting better, but basically it's been Canada and the U.S. And that's not the case, and you just touched on it. Like, this is not a pick your guys, light a cigar, and watch the tournament and get your gold medal. It's going to be a dogfight.
Oh, it is. And just go back to Germany, what they did at the last Olympics. I mean, and you look at the game the other night, you have Edmonton, Ottawa. You got two of the best players in the world facing off each other from Germany now. So one is there and one is looks like he's on his way to be there. So it's great for hockey. You know, you have American players, you have Austin Matthews from Phoenix, Arizona. I mean, it's just fantastic the way our game has grown, and not only in the U.S. and in Canada, but abroad. And you're right; it's not maybe like the women's game. Though Finland did pop their head up there a couple of years ago and make it interesting. So that's even getting deeper and stronger. But I think it's a testament to the growth of our game that if you're not prepared to play, you can lose to anybody. It's like the NHL in the sense that. If you don't put the work in and put the preparation and take everyone seriously, you can lose.
Doug, do you think there's a particular style that you would want to see your team employ in a tournament like this? Like, would it be different from a team you would build to play in the NHL?
Yeah, it would be. I think just because the skill level, our hope is to skate teams into the ground. You know, just come with line after line of players that can play with pace. You can't have that at the NHL level. It's just, you know, at least we don't build our team that way. We use, you know, quite honestly, the recipe that Berkey had in his career as a manager. We like truculence in St. Louis. We try and have players, and Berkey did steal that term from you, by the way, bud. we try and have players that are ugly to play against. You know, bring in a Kyle Clifford to our team here in St. Louis. It goes under the radar screen. Nobody reports it or talks about it, but he's a guy that has a huge influence in turning games around. Our second game of the year, Robert Bertuzzo got hit with a questionable play, and he was the first guy to go grab a guy. The guy didn't want to fight him, but he was there to ask him, do you want to fight? And the other night, you know, Ryan Getzlaff, they get off to a bad start. We score three goals, and Getzy, as the pro that he is, wants to show his team that he's not going to accept that. And who does he go to? He goes to Clifford. So we the long story short is we're not going to have those guys probably at the Olympics.
Good choice.
The way that you build your team in the NHL is different than the way you build it in the Olympics.
Let's talk about your St. Louis Blues here in the little bit of a time we have left with you, talking to Doug Armstrong, GM of Team Canada, and the St. Louis Blues. The first time I saw Jordan Kyrou, he was playing with the Sarnia Sting with Pavel Zacha and Nikita Kerestelev, and he was a youngest member of that line, but he was hands down the fastest, and at times was maybe the fastest player in the OHL. It's taken a couple of years to get there, but Kyrou has, as Berkey would say, popped for the St. Louis Blues. What do you see in that player?
Well, again, he's got dynamic speed, and we go back to what was he like as a junior player. He was a top junior player. He played for Team Canada. He was the Ontario League Player of the Year. So you know going in that he had the skill set to be a good player. And, you know, the Boston Bruins, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the St. Louis Blues were not easy teams to break into because you're vying for a championship. You're trying to have a team that can be competitive night in, night out. And it's not an easy roster to crack, and so he had to go through this, you know, look around at players that were in the league wondering why I'm not there, but he had to go learn his trade in the American Hockey League, put his time in, put the extra effort in, learn from guys that were in the league, and now he's here and he has popped, and night in, night out, quite honestly, he's been our best forward, and I think the guys now enjoy playing with him. They see how they can he can make them more money, you know, give them the puck and let him do his thing, and you end up on the score sheet. So it's been a win-win, but it's just a maturation. I think every player wants to get the NHL the day they're drafted. It's, no one says, okay, I got drafted, I can't wait 5 more years till I get there, I want to go to the minors. No one wants to go to the minors. Nobody wants to play in the American Hockey League. Their goal is always to get to the NHL. But the players that when they get assigned there, that put the time in, that understand or accept the process, are the ones that come out the other end, and he's one of those guys.
Brian?
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction, Army. When you were talking, I remember thinking after we won it in Anaheim, and people were saying Bobby Ryan can't make the team. I'm like, he's not just trying to make any team. He's trying to crack a lineup that just won a title. It's a little different than just trying to get on a team that missed the playoffs.
Oh, for sure. It's the hardest thing is, and it's sometimes easier, as you know, Bricky, like when you get in there, it's easier to play because you're playing with top players, and but it's hard to get in that lineup initially. But when you're there, it's probably an easier game to play. And also, I think coming in, we're not counting on this guy to be the alpha male. We have alpha males. We have Ryan O'Reilly. We have Schwartz. We have Shen. The list goes on and on of people we think should be carrying the mail. So now he comes in, and, yeah, he pops. But if he doesn't pop tonight against Arizona, we should have other guys that are there to pick up the slack for him. So it's interesting. You see guys that play at 18, 19, 20, and sometimes Les Jackson, who I worked with for a number of years in Dallas, had the greatest line. He said, the NHL fails as many players as the players fail the NHL, meaning you put guys in bad spots, the likelihood it might not work out. So you want to put guys in positions of success.
Well, I think when I went to training camp with the Flyers, I think they had 60 players in camp. They gave me number 54, and I called my dad. I said, I don't think I'm in their plans.
I thought you were going to say they gave you number 61.
Doug, as you guys start making your plans here for Team Canada, how early is too early for you guys to sort of piece this thing together, start looking at guys, scouting guys? Like, it still feels like a ways out. Would you guys already be taking a look at guys and watching video and making plans?
Yeah, no, we certainly are. What we're doing now is we've divided up because we're all in the same boat of not being able to travel. As Bricky attested to, working for Team USA, usually right now this group would be out. We'd be watching our team in any off night. We'd be going to a different arena to watch players live. Now it's all video work. So what we've done is each manager has a division to watch, except Ron Francis, because Ron's day job makes him watch all 31 teams to prepare for Seattle for expansion.
Right.
So
yep.
So I'm honing in on the West, but I have a secondary division that I'll watch, and then everyone will do the same thing, and we'll cross over those secondary divisions. But no, it's certainly not too early to be looking at players. And again, we're looking at players now, not to add to the list, but to take off the list, and that's the hardest part.
Gotcha. Listen, you've been very generous with your time. Doug, congratulations again on the nod from Hockey Canada, and you're playing Arizona tonight. Your Blues are. You're 7-2-1, tops of the West. Keep it rolling. We'll look forward to catching up again.
Well, guys, I always enjoy talking to you guys, and stay safe and stay healthy.
There he is, Doug Armstrong, the general manager of the St. Louis Blues and Team Canada's hockey efforts at next year's Olympics. We thank him for his time. We're taking a break. Back in a couple of moments, Leafs and Vancouver Canucks tonight. Other games on the board as well. Calgary Flames and the Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk about that one when Hockey Central returns on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Alongside Brian Burke and Justin Bourne, 11 games tonight around the NHL. We talked about Vancouver and Toronto off the top of the broadcast. Calgary and Winnipeg in this one, and you'll be able to speak with more authority than Justin and I will on this one. No Sam Bennett in the lineup tonight for the Calgary Flames. The reports about asking for a trade. Looks like this is a coach's decision. We saw a very full-throated defense of Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler by Paul Maurice yesterday. Lots of intrigue going into tonight's matchup, Calgary and Winnipeg. What do you make of any of it or all of it, Brian?
I really like Paul Maurice's defense of Blake Wheeler. I think it was a really sensible thing to do to stop that snowball from rolling any further. I like that. And then as far as Bennett's absence. A lot of times that's because you're close to a deal and you don't want to get the player hurt.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. What do you make Winnipeg and Calgary tonight? Winnipeg coming off a victory over the Calgary Flames two nights ago, Justin.
Well, you know, a lot of times I look at the standings and then I look at my preseason expectations and, you know, kind of look for a correction. I thought the Flames were going to be better than, you know, they haven't played a ton of games. They're a 500 hockey club right now, but, you know, the Jets seem to be overachieving. The Flames seem to be a little underachieving to me. So I'm wondering if we don't get some leveling out, get a good push here from the Flames against the Jets. I understand there should be some motivation in the Winnipeg dressing room after what, you know, all Maurice had to say, but I'd like to see I expect to see the Flames start to show their true colors a bit more here.
Ottawa Senators face off against the Montreal Canadiens as well this evening. This is two teams at complete loggerheads. The Ottawa Senators at 1-8-1. The Montreal Canadiens have been a buzzsaw, 7-1-2. They've been the talk of the NHL. Jeez, Brian. I don't know what's more surprising, what's happened to Montreal or what's happened to the Ottawa Senators. I know expectation was different for both squads, but what do you make of Ottawa? This is the last team in this division they need to be facing right now, correct?
Yes, I think it's really, really simple. Their goaltending hasn't been nearly good enough.
And we'll see what happens with Derek Stepan. And yesterday we saw Braden Coburn wave. Looks like Eric Brandstrom's in there tonight for the Ottawa Senators. What do you make of DJ Smith's team, Justin?
Yeah, well, the goaltending thing is a great point. I think that trying to plug the holes of last year with toughness have not been enough for this group. Good luck, Brandstrom, on that bottom pair.
Senators Habs, that's one to watch. Maple Leafs and the Vancouver Canucks as well. Hockey Central back tomorrow. Smith and Jones next on 590.